Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report, a special Thanksgiving edition, as we now have, for the most part, Thanksgiving behind us and that shortened trading week. My name is Corey Fleck, and I appreciate you joining me on this weekend show. Boy, oh boy, was it ever a volatile week, especially for precious metals, and that's something that I will cover a fair bit, especially in this first segment. I am kicking off this show with Mark Chandler. He is a managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. He also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I visit every day. Now, Mark, you and I chat pretty much every Friday, and I appreciate you taking time on this Friday when we are recording it about halfway through the day to discuss, first and foremost, the moves in gold this week. It really started off as a bad week for gold, moving down about $30, and that seemed to be the trend of the week, which was consistent corrections in gold throughout the week. And as you and I are recording this, we're trading right around, let's say, 1785, right around that level. Another correction going on today in gold. It's dropped below that 1800. A lot of technicians are looking at around this 1760 level. Mark, give us your first initial summary on gold's breakdown, continued correction. How long do you think this could keep on going on for?
Yeah, no, it's been what a week for gold. I mean, it's been, you think about what happened, you know, in early August, we were testing $2,075. And I remember there were people who were complaining that when I talked about 2,000, that I was being too cautious. And the sell-off, even for people like me, the pace of this decline, despite what other things that gold has been correlated with, have done well this week. Equities. And a week, you'd expect a weaker dollar. And when I say weaker dollar, the euro is basically at the highest level it's been at since the 1st of September, which was a two-year high. The dollar index is broken down below 92. And yet gold cannot really sustain even the modest upticks. I think a lot of people caught on the wrong side. And I think that I, too, had overestimated underappreciated how much people had bought gold because of the pandemic. And as soon as we got the first, you know, once Pfizer made its announcement on on the vaccine, I think that what we've seen happening is it seems like the strongest selling pressure is coming from the ETFs, who, of course, a lot of people had poured into gold ETFs and the gold funds, the open-ended funds. And that this is where the selling pressure seems to be coming from. And the fact that we see like strong selling pressure into modest upticks tells me there might still be some overhead supply.
So, Mark, you mentioned there that it seemed like gold really ran higher on the back of this pandemic. But in all fairness, it had been correcting over the last about 4 months now. The last couple weeks have been more or less a breakdown in gold as it broke below that 1850 level on the back of, yes, vaccine news. So I guess hopes of this pandemic is going to be behind us. But a lot of the narrative, too, that was driving gold is easier money policies. That hasn't dissipated much, though, right? We should be getting some sort of a spending package and a continued easy Fed next year.
Yep, no, I agree. And that's the thing that I put more like, I should say, stock in, is the fact that for people like me who are not always bullish on gold, who see the fact that one of the arguments we use against gold has been that, well, you don't get any interest for holding this asset. It's a non-yield-bearing asset. But now we've got like trillions of dollars of negative-yielding bonds in the world. And like you say, low yields for as far as the eye can see. And in fact, you think about what's happened in the past couple of weeks. You've got just yesterday, while we were celebrating Thanksgiving in the U.S., Sweden's Riksbank, it made a big jump, about a 25% jump in the bonds it's going to begin buying. The UK has the UK and Australia have eased policy recently, and in a couple of weeks, everybody's expecting the ECB to ease. And the rumors, speculation of the past week or so in the U.S. is that the Federal Reserve will shift its bond buying, maybe increase the amount, but at least shift buying into the long end of the curve to provide more stimulus. So I think that the safe haven aspect of gold, because you know, we talked about it before, we'd see that gold and the stock market were correlated. So gold was treated mathematically, if you will, as a risk-on asset. And yet the risk-ons come back into the fore, and gold hasn't. So I'm concerned about it, but I agree with you that we might have to go a bit lower first, but the larger macro picture, I think, will support gold, and we just have this washout, which I think is more about stale longs getting out than about momentum traders trying to jump onto it.
So does that mean that all those people that did jump on that gold bandwagon when it broke through 1800 and very then quickly through 1900, they were all in a lost position, and you think for the most part these people are out of their positions now?
Well, I don't know, like, out of it yet completely, but it does seem to me that just from the size of the flows and the volumes we've been seeing, it would seem that a lot of people have gotten out. And we'll have to wait for this, you know, the CFTC figures. But that'd be my sense, is what we have to wait for is we need like a capitulation trade. And the break of the 200-day moving average, the move through 1800, I think that's why I like that level that you mentioned, the 1760 level. And if we go through there, I think we got to be thinking about 1700, which is just still in the big picture of things. You think about where we were a year or two ago, and this still is within what one would expect of a deep correction rather than a bear market necessarily.
Okay, I agree with that. It does continue to look simply like a deep correction, and a correction that was needed because of how quickly gold went up, especially in, it was that July timeframe when it just broke through a lot of resistance levels. So Mark, does the gold trade need to go back to being looked at as a safe haven asset? Because you're right, it was moving higher. That is, gold was moving higher with the equity markets. There seemed to be this optimism when investors put money into the U.S. markets. It also landed in gold. That all changed a few weeks ago, I think we can say, when the rotation really took hold in U.S. markets and gold really started to sell off. But then you look on the flip side and you saw Bitcoin just scream higher. Can you make any sense of that trade?
Yes, I can't make sense of the Bitcoin, but I do think that that with gold, I do think that you have something there. That so when I think about gold, what are the main drivers of gold? So I typically will look at interest rates or inflation, and of course we've seen a rise in both, like that is to say, U.S. yields have risen, and the break evens. That's the difference between the inflation-linked securities and conventional bonds. That break even has also moved up. So we've got higher yields and higher inflation expectations. That'd be negative for gold. But we do have stocks, so sometimes it does trade, like we say, as a risk-on asset. Just you buy everything, especially things that hurt when you drop on your feet. And so we've had a rise in commodities, including oil, but also the grains. And we've had a rise in stock market. That you would think would be positive for gold. And then you have the dollar, which also you would expect to be positive for gold. So I don't know. I can't deduce from first economic principles which driver we should put the most weight in. But it seems to me that the vaccine, the rise in U.S. yields are all painting the same kind of picture of a reflation story. Not necessarily inflation, but reflation.
Exactly. And you look to something even like copper, too, which had a very significant breakout this week, trading at levels we haven't seen since 2014, even before, actually 2013. Yeah, let me correct that. That is a key breakout as well. Let's talk about the dollar, too, because the dollar itself is arguably breaking down. I know you're a dollar bear, but do you think this dollar breakdown is coming a little bit too early right now?
Last week, I cautioned against chasing the dollar lower. We did move a bit lower on the dollar than this past week against almost all the major currencies. And as we talk here today, the euro is, like I say, above 1950, testing its highest level since September 1st. But I tell you, I think that the market right now is vulnerable that it's really exaggerating the dollar negatives in the short run. Here's what I'm looking at. Part of the dollar bearish argument I've given you over the last several months, is that the U.S. doesn't have the growth and interest rate differentials to support the dollar. And so the greenback then has to act as a cushion, as a shock absorber to attract foreigners into our asset markets. And what's happened, I think, is that partly because the U.S. social restrictions in the face of this COVID surge are not nearly as severe as most of Europe's. The U.S. economy seems to be growing at a much better pace than Europe. So we saw the PMIs, the preliminary PMIs for November, and they were below the 50 boom-bust level for the Eurozone and Japan and the U.K. The U.S. surprised on the upside. We've had a string of other data, including durable goods data, inventory data, that all point to the U.S. economy perhaps being much more resilient than we thought. I'll give you an example. The Atlanta Fed, like a couple of other Federal Reserves that we have a GDP tracker. It's not supposed to be a forecasting tool as much as sort of an accounting function. As the data comes in, what kind of pace is this showing? Well, about a week ago, the Atlanta Fed was at about 5.6%. That would be annualized growth in Q4. After this recent string of U.S. economic data, they revised up their tracker to 11%. Now, at 11% annualized, so you unannualize, it's an incredible number, I think, especially given that the Eurozone, Japan, and the U.K. may contract in Q4. And we're going to get this message again next week. We're going to get the U.S., the Eurozone, and Japan are going to be reporting employment figures. And what's going to show is that the U.S. unemployment likely slipped a bit. Remember, we peaked around 14%, and it was below 7%. And it might slip a little bit further below 7%. On the other hand, the Eurozone and Japan are expected to see a new cyclical highs in the unemployment. Ours is falling, albeit slower than most people would like to see it fall, but Europe and Japan's is still rising. And so I think that that kind of fundamental backdrop, coupled with the ECB meeting sooner in December before the Fed meets, will help sort of remind people, I guess, in a sense, of this growth divergence, inflation divergence. Both Europe and the Japan are experiencing deflation, and the U.S. PCE deflators, both the core and the headline, are above 1%. Again, it's not as good as the Fed would like, not at the Fed's target of 2%, but in the foreign exchange market, it's about relative value. Everything's a relative value, and I think the U.S. is doing better than Europe and Japan, and that should begin giving the dollar some support as we, that is the dollar, approaches the lower end of a 3 or 4 month trading range.
Okay, so you say this data should give the dollar some support here and maybe a bounce, but isn't the market telling us right now that they're looking past the data, I guess, or just flat out ignoring the data? Maybe we do need the ECB to actually announce some easier program to get traders to switch their positions and their expectations, because right now the data hasn't resonated with traders.
Right, I agree with you. I think that the ECB is going to have to do something if they want to get ahead of the curve of expectations. But at the same time, what I'm looking at too is that these the different momentum indicators like the RSI or the MACD or the slow stochastic, they all suggest the dollar is getting stretched, as you would imagine. I mean, remember, and then on the night of the election, the euro is trading 116, the lower end of the range. And so I think that what I'm really suggesting is that as traders, as investors, we have to make a decision. The dollar index has been roughly 92 to 94. The euro has been roughly 116 to 120. As we approach the edges of the ranges, we've got to decide whether we should play for the breakout or should we be playing to continue the range. And often I find that the risk-reward, as you get close to the edge of the range, the risk-reward really pays you to even up or not to play for the breakout. And what happens is you often miss the breakout, but you just miss the first part of it. You can always, so if you get out in 1950, you say, well, it's not going to get above 120, and lo and behold, we're wrong again, and it goes above 120, you could buy it above 120. And emotionally, you're stronger about buying it above 120 after having taken profits, as opposed to thinking what happens when you go from 119.50 back to the middle of the range, 118, and the shoulda, woulda, couldas.
Well, I guess that's where we stand, though, right? Is waiting for this market to turn and then, I guess, jumping on that trade. But what does this mean for inflation expectations then if the dollar starts to rise? And if the dollar starts to rise, does that mean that gold and the dollar can go up together?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because gold and the dollar have been falling together the past couple of weeks, actually, since we got the first news about the vaccine. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm mixed about what the exact point is that triggers this all. But I do think that that what we're seeing is that there has been a rise, as we're talking about, in the industrial metals, the grains, and the energy complex. But whether that really is inflationary is a different story. Partly, as you know, a lot of the goods that we buy don't have a lot of raw materials in them. You think about our cell phones, our computers. There's a lot of things that we have these days are not raw material intensive, but sort of knowledge and intellectual property intensive. And what a lot of the commodities are showing us is sort of the strength of not of the economy so much, or European economy, but the strength of the Asian economies. And here I'm thinking about China, but also South Korea, Taiwan, Vietnam. And I think that this is what I think the commodity market is more telling us, more about the demand from Asia than it is about the supply.
So then, Mark, as we look forward to the rest of, let's say, this year, so just December, do you see any major changes, any major trends being broken, or what are you going to be paying attention to for the rest of this year, just in December?
Yeah, so we've had some very powerful trends, and so I want to be on the lookout for some technical sign of a reversal pattern, which I would respect given the magnitude of these kind of moves that we've seen. You know, this month of November has been, our Russell 2000, broad measure of the stock market, is up almost 20%. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index and the European, the Dow Jones Stock 600, both of those indexes are up 4 weeks in a row for around 13 to say 14%, something on that kind of magnitude. These are just huge moves. And so I just want to be attuned to or sensitive to possible reversal patterns. These could be single day candlestick. It could be what we're seeing in sterling, for example. We've tested almost every day this week. The sterling got into the 133.80 to 133.95 area. It couldn't get above that 134. And so today, sterling is actually finishing relatively offered. The same thing about the Mexican peso. It's been really one of the strongest currencies in the world in the last several months. Dollar broke down against it, but it's come back and it's still straddling to say this 20 peso area. And I think the other currency I'd point out is just China. The RMB had strengthened sharply in recent weeks. And in the last week, it's really moved sideways. And so to me, these currencies and gold might be really telling us that the dollar is due for a bounce. And so again, like in the equity market, I just want to be sensitive and sort of keeping our eyes looking at the possibility of a reversal pattern. Not happening today.
Not happening today. That's a key point. But again, some of these trends are getting very stretched. Some very interesting comments regarding the currency market. And again, it is a comparison game. And right now, the markets don't seem to care. But data out of the U.S. has been generally better than Europe and Japan. Mark, it's great chatting with you. Thank you again for taking some time on this Friday, which is posted on the weekend show, to recap a crazy volatile week and a fairly larger degree correction for precious metals and focusing on the dollar. Mark, great chatting with you. Thanks, buddy. Have a great rest of your long weekend.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout. Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We are shifting our focus a little bit more into the resource sector now as I am chatting with Jayant Bhandari. He is an advisor to a number of institutional investors that are focused in the resource sector. Jayant is also, I think, very well known to some of our longer time listeners. Now, Jayant, I want to take a step back with you and look kind of big picture at the resource sector and some of the global factors that you see driving different metals. Look, precious metals, it's been a good year for the precious metals, but they are still in this correction. We're all waiting for a bottom to be formed. And from a lot of the people that I respect and technicians that I respect that analyze the sector, it really does seem like we're going to be looking to next year for when the next run higher can come. But we might be starting to see a nice bottom being formed here. Jayant, give us a little rundown, though, of what you are watching globally for the resource sector and what you think it needs to be noted by investors.
Well, Corey, we have to remember that China consumes more than 50% of virtually every commodity. And Chinese economy is back in shape. It's in a growth form again. The fact remains that across the board, commodities have done reasonably well over the year. Despite a fall in March, commodity prices are not only back, they are back in a stronger way. I was talking with a garments manufacturing company based in China a couple of days back, and they told me that the textile exports from China have actually increased about 35% year on year. Although, of course, textile includes export of masks. But Chinese economy has done very well. It's growing at about 4.9% in Q3. The exports from China in H1 grew by 4.6%, and in October the exports from China grew by 11.4%. So Chinese economy seems to be doing very well. China has imposed restrictions, unofficial restrictions on imports from Australia and New Zealand. They are finding COVID in meat imports from New Zealand and Australia. They are claiming that coal produced by Australia is not meeting environmental standards, which is hilarious complaint to make, actually. But that said, it seems that it's hurting China more than it's hurting Australia. And China will probably have to pull back from it. Coking coal is not easy for China to procure. If they don't procure it from Australia, which actually has a sort of monopoly from the Chinese point of view, China has to import it from USA, Canada, or Mongolia, which are distant from the transportation point of view, which means that coking prices have fallen outside China, but they have increased inside China. And Chinese steel manufacturers are suffering, while steel manufacturers outside China are benefiting hugely from this. So this cannot continue for China if China wants to stay competitive. And in terms of thermal coal, something very interesting has happened, which is that, ironically, it might be benefiting Australia. By restricting imports of thermal coal, China is having to import it from faraway places and otherwise expensive places, which means thermal coal prices have gone up, which is actually benefiting Australia. So you will continue to hear about this unofficial trade war between China and Australia. The fact remains that Australia will emerge hurt from it. From a government of Australia's website, you can see that new projects coming online are investing about 30% more in capex in commodity businesses than it was the case last year. So I think Australia is doing very well. Chinese product consumption and growth is back in shape. You will hear all these noise about trade war between Australia and China, but I think it will get washed away eventually because China will unnecessarily suffer if they don't undo their restrictions. Now, China, of course, hasn't imposed any restrictions on import of iron ore and LNG from Australia because China cannot do without Australia in terms of those two commodities. So again, overall, I think the future looks quite good in terms of increasing consumption of commodities to me. And Australia should actually benefit from all this. And as a result, companies in Australia that have suffered, commodity companies that have suffered because of trade war between Australia and China might revert back to their normal.
So do you think, at least in the short term, that this trade war between China and Australia could result in any price fluctuations in any of the other metals, maybe slightly bigger resource markets?
No, it can't, because China is indeed trying to restrict import of copper concentrate and other commodities from Australia. But the problem is that, as with thermal coal, these commodities are very fungible. If you don't import it from Australia, China has to import it from somewhere else, and then Australia can supply the same commodities, same concentrates and same commodities to some other countries. And that's what you can see in thermal coal. Import of thermal coal by South Korea, Japan has increased quite nicely, imports from Australia. So while China is restricting it, Australia is able to find different clients, while those people who were buying it from other countries, those countries that were supplying to Japan and Korea can now supply to China. So China is only increasing the cost of doing business rather than actually restricting import of commodities.
So, Giant, what about some of the other commodity sectors then in terms of either precious metals or base metals? As I mentioned, precious metals are continuing in this correction, but base metals, just this week, copper had a breakout to levels that we hadn't seen since 2014. Are there any areas, any certain commodity sectors that you think provide some good investment opportunities right now?
I think commodity sectors are well priced for now. I would not fall prey to what people have been claiming about new green technology commodities. I think that is a difficult area. The problem is that while Biden and many of the other governments might be interested in making their countries so-called green, they actually cannot make their countries green by imposing green technology from top down. Their problem is that post-COVID, they will have a huge shortage of cash. And when reality sinks in, they will realize that they have to work towards improving the productivities of their economies rather than imposing what sounds good, which is the green technology. Green technology has to improve organically. Green technology has done very well. In many areas, sun-based and wind-based energy has done very well. But this has to improve organically. This has to be productive. This has to be economical before it gets traction in the society. Otherwise, you would be destroying economic value, and we are in no position to do destroy economic value, particularly when free checks have to go to welfare recipients and unemployed people.
So even the recent investment flows into these clean energies like solar and other clean energy ETFs, you don't think that's a sustainable trend, it sounds like.
I would be very careful about it. I would not invest in those things based on this euphoria to do with AOC kind of people's marketed formula for how we can improve green technology. Any bullishness that has arrived because of those things must disappear with time, and people will be at a loss. But at the same time, Corey, that does not mean that you should be discouraged from investing in green-based technology, as long as you understand the fundamentals of those companies and believe that those companies would benefit going forward, irrespective of what Biden and AOC managed to do to the economy. Because if those tech companies are productive. They are, if they can generate value without government subsidies, then why not? They will continue to be a beneficiary. And if they do benefit from any government subsidies when Biden comes to, if and when Biden comes to power, then that will be extra cream on the top of the cake.
Okay. Let's get also a comment on precious metals, because a couple answers ago, you even said that you think a lot of metal sectors are priced fairly right now. When it comes to the precious metals, gold is about over $200 off of its highs. Silver, you can say, has been performing a bit better during this correction. And same with some of the gold stocks. They were selling off a couple weeks ago. Some of the ones, at least in my portfolio, really seem like they have started to bottom here. How are you playing this pullback in precious metals? And do you think that it'll take to next year? Or what do you think will drive the prices?
Well, I am certainly optimistic about the precious metals. And precious metals are a different kind of commodities. They are a function of what's happening in the economies around the world. And we do see increase in political uncertainty around the world. The wars will go up going forward. There will be a lot of problems in the third world countries. As I just mentioned to you earlier, that Bangladesh and India are suffering hugely from COVID. And that is the same case with a lot of third world countries. So as a result, because of the social problems in those countries, which will obviously result from economic problems created by COVID, consumption of gold by savers will increase. You can actually see that in the performance of gold. Now, gold bugs can start to worry about a fall of gold by 5% or so. But even currencies fall by 5%. US dollar has fallen by more than 5% in terms of Chinese yuan this year. So what's the big deal about a change of 5% in any commodity pricing, particularly when it has gone up very significantly over the last 1 year? So I wouldn't worry much about that 5% fall in gold price. In fact, that shows how good the support level of gold price is. It does fall by $50 or $100, and then it reverts back to its normal $1,900 per ounce gold. So I think at $1,800 to $1,900, it's well supported. I would not be surprised if there is increased buying going forward, just because risk in the economy and in the society will go up over the next 1 year.
So does that mean that you're starting to buy some shares right now, maybe playing the so-called tax loss selling at the end of the year and playing for the fact that gold has corrected now for about 4 months and it is due for some sort of a rebound?
Oh, absolutely. I am always invested anyway, Corey, just because there's always an opportunity somewhere, particularly in smaller companies, because people tend to get bored of smaller companies and they forget about them. So there's always an opportunity lurking somewhere. So if you keep your eyes open and look around, you will find good companies irrespective of what's happening in the economy or what's happening in the market. And that is why I do pay attention to what's happening in the economy, but a lot of people get so bogged down in what's happening in the economy that they go into a sort of coma when it comes to investing in isolated companies, because they think what will happen to the economy will hurt their individual investments as well, which is not necessarily the case. You can always find companies that will survive, that will and can survive any economic hardship in the society.
Giant, do you care to share any companies that you are watching that you think has some nice catalysts or that are just quite frankly undervalued right now?
There are always some companies. One is TMAC Resources. The ticker is TMR. It's trading at less than $1.20. And there is a merger that might happen with Shandong Gold, a Chinese government-owned company. But Government of Canada is, of course, not giving permission for that merger to go ahead. But if this merger were to go ahead, TMAC shareholders would get $1.75 per share. My hope is that Canadian government declines to let this merger happen, because there is indeed an issue to do with security of Canada. However, if the government of Canada declines to give permission to the merger, my guess is that TMAC resources will actually go back to 175 anyway, because gold price has improved substantially from the time that the merger was announced. Now, TMAC share price has fallen because investors have become bored. They know that it might take another 6 months before a decision comes out. But hey, if I can make 50% by waiting on an investment for 6 months, I have absolutely no problems doing it. At least the support level is very good in TMAC resources. So I'm very happy buying it, accumulating between $1.10 and $1.20.
All right, Giant, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you for your time today. Some interesting comments looking outside just U.S.-specific drivers and outside of simply just the precious metals. We do still need to focus so much on what's going on with China, but China and the trade war with Australia causing some price movements in metals that some people might not be paying attention to, or resources that people might not be paying attention to. Giant, thanks for your time again. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you very much, Corey.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Cortland Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to wrap up the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm wrapping up the weekend edition with Ivan Bebek. Now, everybody remembers Ivan as the past, I guess, executive chairman of Orin Resources. Orin Resources has since gone through a, let's call it a split, a spin out of the Peruvian projects, and a rename and a refocus as Fury Gold Mines. We are going to be focusing a lot on what's going on in Peru, because I've been getting a number of emails and questions from existing shareholders of both of these companies, which are unlisted, as to what some of the updates are. So the two companies in Peru, Tier 1 Metals, Ivan is the chairman of Tier 1 Metals, and Sombrero, he is the CEO of Sombrero. Let's start with Tier 1 Metals here, Ivan. I know that the listing is scheduled for Q1 of next year, but what can investors expect? What are they looking at here for some of the fundamentals of Tier 1 Metals when it does come publicly traded?
Hi, Corey. Great. Thanks to have me back on your show. And it's been quite the whirlwind, as you've pointed out. The transformational event was substantial, but you know, the one theme that we're seeing, and you'll hear it today, is all of these opportunities are getting much better than they were prior to us doing the split, including the price of the commodities, copper being, you know, at 7-year highs, almost $3.40 a pound, and gold, you know, it's been through its volatility lately, but I think that's an incredibly good sign for what's to come ahead for those metals. So Tier 1 is rapidly working towards completing the targeting on the Curibaya project. We impressed ourselves in the market with the initial sampling, which was multi-kilo silver over about a 4 square kilometer area. That is expanded now. We've sampled a lot more, both really high-grade silver and high-grade gold. That expands that footprint. We've learned about the system. Originally, we were, you know, really excited about a really good epithermal silver gold target. And what we found out about it so far was a couple key factors. One is we've done geophysics. We're completing our magnetics. It's telling us what might be underneath the surface. We've found a major structural proponent to the actual silver, and where we think the silver is going to coalesce and where there could be a very high grade silver deposit. We've identified this as a lithocap, which means we're high up in the system, but very impressively, we think we're onto a world-class porphyry target beside or beneath the precious metals, which is very common in these type of systems. And, you know, the information is coming in as early as yesterday, and it'll be more final in the next 2 weeks. There'll be a press release explaining all of this. But, you know, if you dreamt about a world-class silver target, I think now you can add a major porphyry target to that. And the word preserved comes up a lot with the geologist, meaning we're above the system, we're not exposed, the system has not eroded away. So I think where I originally stood with Kiribaya was, wow, exciting multi-kilo silver and up to 43 gram gold on these veins over a pretty substantial area, which was about 4 square kilometers, that has now gotten about 50% bigger. And then learning, once we got a peek at the geophysics and the magnetics, which are about to complete here, we're starting to see a major porphyry target. And the last thing I'll point out about Kiribaya, which is substantial, is there is the age dating of the rocks and the intrusions is the same as those world-class porphyry deposits along the belt. This is the first ever Eocene epithermal system, meaning precious metal system, that's been dated that age in this part of Peru. So Kiribaya is something new. It does make, and you will see this in the next few weeks, it does make the world-class opportunity status for both precious and base metals. And it's going to be, I think, comparatively as interesting on a perspective as Sombrero, definitely as interesting as Fury, you know. And so it's really come together way better than we thought it would. We had early inclinations this could be a very robust system for precious metals. And now we see that being also for base metals, which, as you know, copper has been on fire.
Yeah, copper had a very key breakout this week. But Ivan, I know a lot of people are wondering about permits, actually getting drills on site. What updates can you give us in terms of the permitting?
So that's a great question. And in this part of Peru, we're blessed with a lot better permitting process. And we're also blessed with the fact that the community is very, very much in favor of our presence. And I think we're going to see drill permits in hand early Q1. And our plan to relist is actually February. So within 2 months from today and a couple of weeks of that being for the holidays, we're not far from coming back trading. And we think we'll have about a month before we actually turn drills. But we're very mature in the stages of reaching that drill permit. So drill permits will be in hand about a few weeks after we relist in early February.
So in terms of future news or even news before the actual listing, do you guys still have a lot of surface work, a lot of targeting work to do, or is this thing pretty much drill ready?
So where we stand there is we're in the last week of completing all of that work. We have not fed the market or investors with updates along the way, because the system needed to complete before we knew exactly what we're dealing with. And we wanted to come out with one strong targeting model. And you will see that in the next couple of weeks. You're also going to see an acquisition of another asset. One of our colleagues has been after for about 9 years. He's our country manager, has been really keen on this asset. And we've reviewed it. Technically, we are looking to complete an acquisition there before year end. And it's something that would be comparatively interesting to Sombrero's best day and or Kiribaya's best day. So it's another world-class swing. We're really looking at making sure Kiribaya and Tier 1 Metals has the opportunity, much like Orin did, to deliver on multiple assets offering really high-quality silver and gold opportunities, as well as copper opportunities on the coast of Peru in areas where obtaining community permit and drill permits is very favorable. And that's been an underground or an underlining feature for all of the things we're doing here. So expect a lot of news by year end, a lot of podcasts in January before we relist in February. You know, I'm always asked, what's your favorite one of the three that you've spun? I like them all, as I would like three children. You know, if I was to choose children, I would choose all three at the same time. But where I stand right now is blown away by what's happening at Kiribaya. The technical team, the board is equally of that opinion. And I can't wait until these press releases come out here in the next 2 weeks prior to year end. And then that's it. Tier one is close. It got way better. There's more coming. It covers really, really high quality, world-class precious metal silver gold targets, as well as porphyry targets, on one of the most prolific trends in all of Peru and globally for major discoveries.
Okay, so a lot of news that we will follow up on. One final point for Tier 1, what's in the treasury? What are you expecting in terms of money and what will be needed to get your feet on the ground, get a drill on the ground?
Great question there. We have about $4 million is what we started with. We're not spending all of that. We actually can coast through the end of next year on a G&A basis and complete our near-term work that we want to complete. However, that doesn't include capital for drilling. So once we reveal all the acquisitions we're going to do, and once we show you and everyone else how good the targeting really came together, how big these opportunities, I mean, I classified them as world-class, and I can't wait to justify those with the scale and the opportunities in the press releases, then we'll look at doing a bit of a top-up to the treasury. We'll have that discussion probably mid-late January once all the news is out, and we will do much like in the fashion of Warren financings. We'll try to align ourselves with very strategic investors to drive the business plan forward and finance at a very favorable market price that respects the opportunity as well as the current anti-dilutive theme of all of our funding. So I think we're going to be in a very strong position to finance going into one of the best points of our market from a seasonal perspective. Our launch will be in February, and I think it's going to come out really, really strong.
Okay, let's move over to Sombrero now. I know Sombrero, the listing is planned a little bit later than Tier 1 Metals, but it is still planned relatively early next year, late Q1, maybe early Q2 of next year. What updates can you give us for the Sombrero spinout, please?
So Sombrero is, you know, as we've described, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, you know, to go find another Las Bambas just in 10% of the land position, just as a reminder. And when you see copper at 340, my phone is blowing up with a lot of keen interest on seeing Sombrero trading with permits in hand. You know, it's coming listing about a month to 2 months after Tier 1 starts trading. And we have adjusted our approach. We'll be a lot more public about it early Q1 so that we can drill everything versus just the first target that has gotten everyone so excited. We're working through additional community access so we can resume trenching, which is now allowed in Peru. And we have a pretty ambitious plan to get drill permits on a series of targets starting about a month or two after Sombrero starts trading. There was a couple companies which just received Consulta Previas. This is the social consulting permit in Ayacucho. There's been a lot of, you know, interesting politics that's gone on with the current president or impeachment. And, you know, there's been a bit of a reorganization politically in Peru that a lot of people were concerned about. You know, relative to what we're doing, we have not seen a slowdown. We've seen the vice mine minister take over for the mine minister. We've seen a lot of continuity there. We see the ambition, and I'm not sure if it's because COVID was so impactful on economically, but we've seen a lot of ambition and theme towards working on shortening the timelines for all of us exploring down in Peru. So I think that we're in really good shape. I think we're going to come out really strong with a lot more than we were planning to offer shareholders previously at Sombrero, meaning we're going to shorten the long-term timeline of revealing much more of the district in a much more clever way. And I think that's something we can all look forward to. It started with $8 million. That was the treasury at the end of October. That treasury is barely being spent because we're obviously not doing much work yet. But we will have a plethora of updates in Q1 ahead of the listing. And, you know, in this copper environment or the one that's coming, I think it's going to be one that the global investing market around copper is going to pay attention due to the scale of the opportunity, which, you know, we think has gotten a lot better since we've originally talked about it as early as spring of this year. So it's something that's going to impress again, as it has continuously previously.
Okay, so Sombrero, a very different focus than what's going on in Tier 1 Metals, but also going for these world-class deposits. What about any sort of land access agreements or permits for Sombrero as well?
So it could be a pretty good update there before year end, but I think in Q1 will be the thick of that news prior to resuming trading. We'll likely be in an extremely positive position to go in, you know, update everyone and have permits, if not in hand, close enough to being in hand that we'd be weeks away to start drilling. So that's coming along at its own pace. but it's coming along in a very positive direction from the way we were handling it prior. And we've just, you know, had a chance to do more and to have more positive impact during COVID. And a lot of people in the neighboring communities have all asked for us to be involved. And we plan to sign agreements with everyone and set ourselves up to drill everything. And that's more of the size opportunity. And I think when you mention the difference between Sombrero and Tier 1, everybody knows about Sombrero. Nobody knows about Tier 1 yet. Everybody will be educated on Tier 1 as we develop that asset base properly between now and when we resume trading. So, you know, I think Tier 1 will be as compelling. It will have that precious metal start, but also the big copper porphyry look as well. And I think both will be, you know, opportunities as an investor that will be well worth the wait, well worth the headache of what we've just went through. And I think everybody will have a chance to thrive and win on both of those opportunities the same way they would have on the original plan of Orin delivering a 10 to 20 time the share price kind of return. That's what we're really after. And they're both shaping up really well with the commodity market to deliver those returns.
All right, Ivan, I do want to bring in Fury now just for a trading perspective here. Now, Fury is traded on the TSX and the NYSE under the symbol FURY. It has been noted that there is a fairly large short position, about 1 million shares short, and there was a bit of a short attack that happened on Fury when it was first listed. Relating this to some of these Peruvian projects and companies, when they become listed, what insights can you give us on the short position in Fury and what that could mean for some of these Peru plays?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. And a few investors have brought several slanted articles that have been written about Fury intentionally, you know, when it came out trading, pushing negativity and confusion. First point I'll make is Fury is trading well below the fundamental value of the existing assets at $1,350 gold, never mind today's current gold price, right? And yes, I understand the deal was confusing and there's a re-rate we're looking for. I think a lot of investors have forgotten our ability to perform well above our peers. You know, pointing back to Orin was trading at 0.98 net asset value, where the peer group trades at 0.54 when we went to go and buy East Main's assets, right? The second point I'll make is there's no mystery that there's a fatigue or frustration with the shareholders of East Main. They drilled 1 million ounces over 25 years. And I think that the shorting crowd had taken liberties of the confusion of the deal, the election, as well as the frustration of how that asset was managed prior to us coming along. So we inherited a great opportunity, but we inherited a lot of frustrated investors. So we've met several of them, right? What's more important and what we should all be thinking about and asking the question of is, how's drilling going? It's going amazing. You know, when you drill a hole, you can look at and see the right rock, or you can see rock that has no chance. And the rock we've been seeing has been above what we expected. We're seeing more and more targets, as you saw in our last press release, that this thing could really grow considerably bigger than we originally thought, which is now the scale factor. But I think the daylighting of the value that comes when we start talking about drilling Homestake and Committee Bay, it's missing from the share price. And I think that as we get results from what we're doing now going into Q1, investors are going to be more than impressed by how really opportunistic this Eau Claire and the surrounding assets are really providing us. And I think Fury's coming together fundamentally much better than we thought, even far better than the market's giving credit for. And, you know, we plan to keep marketing. We have Zoom meetings every week. We're doing constant conferences. And the feedback that we're getting from a series of long-term gold funds does not correlate with the messaging you're seeing on some inexperienced letter writers that don't have mining backgrounds and have specific agendas, whether they be short or what have you. So, you know, I'm extremely excited. I don't mind the current share price performance because I know how the drilling's going and I know what the first quarter looks like for shareholders. So I'd say to everyone, look very forward to a considerable re-rate on the share price in Q1. As Mike Timmins has been mentioning, the case for that's being made with the drill bit, so it's going to be better. Back to Tier 1 and Sombrero, the great question, you've asked it and many have asked us, how do we expect the trading to start on those two companies? Obviously, Fury had a bit of a short attack right out the gate. Well, the good news is we're going to be past the inauguration, hopefully, of the election. We're in a massive upswing for copper. It will be in the seasonal strong point of the year on precious metals as well, being February for Tier 1. But we're not inheriting 35 million shares of investors that have been frustrated with an asset for 25 years. One of Orin's biggest strengths, and this is a massive strength for all three of these companies, is our shareholders. And we have some of the best exploration shareholders in the world. And so I think that when Tier 1 and Sombrero come back trading with our shareholders and the culture of our investments, and once people can see how great these opportunities are coming together at Tier 1 in this environment of commodities as well as Sombrero, I think the trading is going to be entirely opposite to what we endured with Tier 1. But I think come the end of Q1, all three companies are going to be trading in that premium range because they're going to offer more than you'll see across the marketplace. You're going to see the scale come out of each one. You're going to see the excitement that we've been able to deliver. And this time we're going to be drilling, which should be able to sustain that. And those world-class discoveries we've all dreamed about as shareholders will finally be at the forefront of coming to fruition. So extremely exciting. I think a very strong first quarter for both Peruvian companies. I look forward to the news that's pending on Tier 1 Metals and to the updates we'll provide in Q1 for Sombrero. And I can't wait to see the drill results that are currently being drilled at Fury in early Q1 as we plan to re-rate ourselves considerably.
All right, Ivan, we're going to wrap it up there. If anybody has any questions on any of the companies we have discussed here, please email me, fleck@kereport.com. That goes for any of the guests that I have or any of the companies that I have highlighted throughout the week on daily editorials. Everybody, I hope you're having a great weekend. For all of our listeners down in the U.S., I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. And, well, looking forward to moving through December, getting this year behind us and seeing what 2021 holds. Everybody, again, thanks for joining me this weekend. Ivan, thank you for your time. I hope everybody has a great rest of their weekend.
Thank you so much.